People are beautiful. People are ugly. People are so encouraging sometimes. People are so draining sometimes. People can be so helpful. People can be so hurtful. People are a paradox. God created within each of us this capacity to be reflectors of His beauty in this world. But also inside of us, we have this sin-sprouting tendency to be beasts of burdens. And somehow, you and I have to figure out how to live with the beauty that is in us as well as the beast that is in us. You live with yourself, so I don't have to tell you about your beast. You don't have to tell me about mine. We're very aware of our beast. But we have to somehow reconcile that and learn not to lose sight of the beauty inside of the beast. But the other problem with that is we not only have to live with ourselves in that, we have to learn to live with other people. People who often have beauty in them, but many other times also have a beast in them. See, some of the times in relationships, the problem we think is with them, when in reality the problem is actually within us. There are times that we think the problem is within us, but the reality of it is, the problem is more within them. And sometimes, probably more times than we want to admit, the problem lies within both of us. You see, somewhere people live in this paradox, this trap of beauty and the beast. To borrow the words of a great philosopher, Forrest Gump, people are like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. We hope for the beauty, but somehow we have to learn to live with the beast. So when we stand on our wedding day, we marry the beauty that's in the other person. But do you know most of the time where we have to live out our wedding vows? It's not for the beauty in the other person. It's for the beast that's in the other person. You go for a job interview, they will interview you, and they will show you everything beautiful about the company, and you think, this is fantastic. Except every day when you go to work now, most of your problems are not dealing with the beauty of the company, it's the beast of the company. We come to church. And we all put on our smiling faces, and we talk about the beauty, and there is a lot of beauty in us, but deep down inside, we know the beast that lives, and the longer you're around the church, the beast will come out. And many people lose sight of the beauty of the church because of that beast. But somehow we have to learn to live between the two. In a few short months, Easter will be upon us. And that means Easter eggs. And Easter eggs mean candy. I'm anxious for Emerson to get a little bit older so I can teach her about the tithe. A tenth of your candy goes to Dad. To taste test. Now, if you're keeping track and just want to know what candy Emerson does like or will like, I'll give you a list. If it's chocolate, she likes Reese's, Butterfinger, and Snickers. If you're going for a little more candy, she will like Sour Patch Kids. Sour Skittles. She loves Sour Skittles. Our personal favorite, Jolly Rancher jelly beans. They are so good. I learned several months ago why adults don't exchange Easter eggs with each other. Because of that last candy, jelly beans. Some of you may know where I'm going with this. The game's been out a while, but Sarah and I bought Bean Boozled. Any of you know what Bean Boozled is? So in Bean Boozled, you get one color of a jelly bean, but it has two possible flavors, and you don't know which flavor it is until you bite into it. So, if you get, and I don't remember the color, so I had to write them down. If you receive a white jelly bean, it will either taste like coconut or spoiled milk. If you receive a green jelly bean, it will either taste like lime or lawn clippings. So what we hope for when you get a blue one, you hope that it tastes like berry, but it could taste like toothpaste. And you have to be prepared to deal with the toothpaste in case it doesn't taste like the berry. Just to gross you out so you don't think about lunch and want me to be quiet, I'll just give you a few more. You hope for buttered popcorn, but you might have to deal with a rotten egg. And this is the worst. There's a few worse, but I wanted to keep it PG-13. You hope for chocolate pudding, but you could get canned dog food. See, you're not ready for lunch now, are you? I just bought myself 10 more minutes. You see, we always hope for the beauty in people, but often we are left dealing and living with the beast that is in people. And we have to learn how to deal with that and live with that in a God-honoring way. And so this is what we're doing in the book of Genesis. We're studying relationships, and their relationships were doozies. There's a lot of beauty to them. There's a lot of beast to them. 2 weeks ago, we talked about communication. Communication can be a beautiful thing in a relationship. It also can be a beast that tears it apart. If you missed that message, we do have them online. You can go to trynewlife.com and catch up on that. But today we're going to talk about Cain and Abel and talk about how comparison and relationship can be beautiful or it can cause beasts in our relationship. So Cain, when you read the scripture, Cain was nothing like Abel and Abel was nothing like Cain. Cain was an answer to his mama's prayer, for his very name means to be acquired, to be brought forth with the help of the Lord. You know how it is with your first child. Sometimes you have to beg and plead with God. So he was an answer to his mama's prayer. But Abel was kind of that second accident, came from the sparkle in his daddy's eye type of child. For his name could be nicknamed Ecclesiastes. Solomon uses his name all throughout that book when he says, "Vanity, vanity, everything is vanity." Abel's name literally means vanity. Is that everything in life is like Abel. Is that injustice and meaningless and will come to an end. Cain was a farmer. Abel was a shepherd. Cain had to be intentional with the use of his land because he had to use the same land year after year to produce crops. Abel just moved from one green pasture to another. Cain would have walked his land. He would have looked for rocks and thorns and thistles and removed anything from the land that would have kept plants and his crops from growing. But Abel, on the other hand, if he saw a bad patch, he just led his sheep around it and didn't have to worry about it. Cain laid awake at night praying for his land. Abel laid awake trying to sleep on his. Cain and Abel were not very much alike. In fact, we see this in their offerings that they gave. Cain liked leftovers. How many of you like leftovers? How many of you hate leftovers? There's some people that won't eat leftovers. God will save you one day, help you see the light. Abel was more of an appetizer kind of guy. He wanted the first thing that he gave or received to be the very best. You see, Cain gave an offering like an insurance plan. He gave out of the abundance that was left. So in case there wasn't enough left over at the end of the month, he just wouldn't give as much. So he had this insurance plan. But Abel said, "I'm going to give the first and I'm going to give the best unto the Lord. I'm going to come with an offering that is prepared and intentional and with purpose and give it to the Lord." And this is what we read, is that the Lord was accepting of Cain's offering, but he was not accepting. He was accepting of Abel's offering, was not accepting of Cain's offering. When you read into the text, I think we can decide that there was a difference between Cain and Abel. But Cain did not react to any of these differences until he found out the Lord did not accept his offering. And I wondered, why was it about the offering? What was it that caused Cain to be angry at this point? But he never seemed to really make a big deal about all the other differences. And here's what I came up with. It's because Abel received what Cain thought he deserved. I'll help you a little bit this morning. You see, we all deal with this comparison trap. And here's where it usually reveals itself in any and all relationships. It's when someone else in our life receives what we think we deserved to receive. So when someone in our job who has less years of experience, less common sense, less certifications, they get the promotion and we get looked over. They received what we deserve to receive. All of a sudden, comparison starts to happen. And here's what we wonder. What is so good about them and what is so bad about us? And what we typically determine is that there's more bad in the other person than there is in us. You notice that? So when someone who's younger than us, makes less money than us, hasn't even been saving as long as we've been trying to save for that car that we want or that vacation we want to go on or the house we want to have, when they get it before us, all of a sudden comparison enters into our relationships. And we begin to wonder, what is it about them that's not true of me? Now, most of you are probably fully spiritual and have this down. You don't get bitter towards the other person at this point. You just move on. I'm still young enough, I struggle at this place. I start getting feelings stirred up towards that other person when in reality is that person didn't do anything inherently wrong. But somehow I felt like I have been cheated, and so you deal with this comparison that happens in relationships. We can get a little bit deeper and tougher in life because this happens in the Christian life and the church life of the church that I don't understand. Is that people you know and love and care for and prayed for, their prayer was answered. But when you pray it for your own, all of a sudden you start comparing yourself and say, what's wrong with me? And sometimes we can get a little bit bitter and say, you know what? I give more to the church than they ever give. I have faith. They don't even profess to have faith. Why would God do a miracle for them but not for me? And we get in this comparison trap, and it's a moment of decision. Comparison in any relationships will always force us to do one of two things. It will either give us the power to make us better, or it will give us the power to make us bitter. This is where Cain was. He had a decision to make. Would he choose to become better with this comparison, or would he choose to become bitter with this comparison? What's interesting is that as he compared himself to Abel, he never had a conversation with Abel about this. But everybody could tell what was going on. None of you are like this, but you know people like this, and if you're sitting next to them, don't look at them. But you don't have to ask if they've had a bad day. You don't have to ask what went wrong. You don't want to know. Because everything about them on their body language is like, you're just like, don't mess. I think this is what the family was doing for Cain. It says he was so downcast. They probably said, don't talk to Cain. Don't talk to Cain. I don't know what's going on, but don't talk to Cain. Leave him alone. He was so downcast, the Lord said to him, what's wrong? If you do what is right, won't right come to you? In other words, here's what he's saying. You can see the difference, and you have the choice where you can change something in your own life. Is that God used Abel to reveal something in Cain that he needed to change? And let me just clarify, it was not about the offering. It was about his heart. So if you think I'm going towards money about this, that has nothing to do with money. I don't think he cares about our money because he cares more about our heart. And a way to get our heart is through money. But he wanted Cain's heart. And Cain had a choice. He could either decide to change and become like Abel in a better sense, or he could become bitter. And here's what God said. He said, sin is crouching at your door and it will rule you. It will desire you. My translation today, it will make you bitter. Somehow he had to lie to Abel to get him out to the field. Even if he just said, let's go to the field. He didn't tell him the whole truth. He didn't say, I'm going to kill you when we get there. You know what the Bible calls Satan? He's the father of lies. And you can see that Cain is at this trap where he could become something beautiful in his life, or the beast could really come out. And you see this moment of decision that the beast begins to rule in his life. Because when we're in this moment of comparison, we either have the power to become better or we have the power to become bitter in our walk with him. So I think most of us do what Cain did. We start comparing things, but we don't compare equals. Here's what happens when we're trying to decide. We often will compare what is worst in us to what is best in the other person. Here's the problem with Cain. He gave not his best offering, but I would say his worst offering. And it was being compared to the best that was in Abel. Translate, social media. You know what social media does? We never post our worst stuff. We never post the first picture when we wake up in the morning. Hair everywhere. You wake up beautiful, but me, hair everywhere, morning breath, all that good stuff. Nobody posts our worst self. So that when people see it, what do? We can say, well, I'm not like them. Look at them. They're just so much better than me. And what we know is what's worst in us. And what we don't know about the other person is about what is worst in them. So we constantly are dealing with this, and we come to this moment of comparison, this moment of decision, where it can either make us better or it can make us bitter. There's a couple of things that happen in this moment that I think we have to choose. Sometimes God will use people to reveal things in our life we need to change. And it's not the other person's fault. He will just use them to reveal them. I find it interesting that God had a conversation with Cain, and Cain never responded back to God. He was trying to work and deal and work in his life and give him the choice to change, but he never decided to change. And so if you are in a situation in your relationships where comparison comes in, sometimes it's to reveal to us that there are things we need to change. Other times, it's to teach us to be content. Here's how you know whether comparison makes you better or bitter. When someone else who you think doesn't deserve whatever it is they got that you didn't get, if you can celebrate with them, you are better and not bitter. Hold on, I need to talk to myself for a little bit. That's good. That's good. One of the hardest things to do is to celebrate other people's successes when you yourself are struggling. But when we are at a place where we understand that God is the author of our lives, that what He is revealing in us is things that we need to change, or at times just to be content with what we have, that He is our provider, man, that's the place we want to be. So sometimes we need to change. Sometimes we need to learn to be content. I love how the story ends. If we were to compare Cain and Abel, well, let's just take a poll. How many of you want to be like Cain? I know it's too serious. He's a murderer, but there would have been some smart aleck who would have raised their hand if he wasn't. I know. Somebody was thinking about it. But none of us want to be like Cain. And all of us would say, if we had to choose between being like Cain and being like Abel, how many of us would say we want to be like Abel other than we don't want to be killed? We just want to give our best to the Lord. Hebrews uses Abel as an example of faith. That he gave his offering in faith. When we look at Cain's life, we kind of think, man, he's the beast. And Abel is the beauty. I think when we look closer, we can find a little bit of Cain in all of us. There's a beast looming in all of us, isn't there? Probably the person sitting next to you may not even know what it is. If they're your spouse, they probably do. You live close enough, you find it. But most people here don't know the Cain that is in you, and so we never want to deal with the Cain, but I love what God does. Cain says, Lord, not only have I been banished, have my parents been banished from the Garden of Eden, this perfect world. He could have walked by it and peered in and seen all the beauty that they missed out on, but never could have had it. But the land that He had given them to work, he was expelled from that land. He was out of a job. He would be a wanderer for the rest of his life. Just hope there was enough food and there's enough water to live off of the land. And he said, Lord, someone will kill me. And I love what God does. This ugly, this beast of a person, God comes and puts a mark on him. Anyone who saw the mark knew not only was he a murderer, but they knew that if they did to Cain what Cain truly deserved, that they would receive vengeance seven times over. We serve a God who always sees the beast in our relationship. But we serve a God who loves us and cares so much for us that He sees the beast that is in us. And Jesus, the Son, said to the Father, I will go and I will take the beast that is in them and I will put it upon myself and I will be marked like a beast. Isaiah 55 says that He was so disfigured beyond that of any human form that you could not recognize Him. He took upon Him the marks of the beast. But then later in Isaiah it would say that by His wounds, by His marks, we have been healed. That God is able to see the beast in us and He takes it upon Himself and He puts upon us the mark of beauty that covers all of the beast that is in our life. But I think the place that we have to get to is that He didn't do it for just you and He didn't do it just for just me. He did it for those people in our life that are the beast. That the way He's calling us to be in relationship with them is to understand that He is a God who always looks past the beast and sees the beauty that's inside of them. And says, I will take that upon myself and I want to make them beautiful. So I would tell you today, let His mark cover you. Let His mark cover the beast in your life and the beast in the lives of people you're in relationship with, because He will mark you with His beauty. Let His love defend you, and let His love be that which defines you.